Welcome to the Tech Savvy Professor Podcast, two faculty who love tech and love making it part of their work. I'm Marty Gentius from Kent State University.
And I'm Eric Perry, clinical faculty at Southern New Hampshire University.
This is a part three of what we envisioned was a three-part series. Sometimes I feel like it could have been a 10-part series. And maybe we'll return to AI again after this at some point, with either some new news or some new twist on it. But this part is about faculty use of AI and sort of our experiences talking about what we know about faculty use. I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal use of it as a faculty member. Eric might have some of his own examples and maybe examples he's heard from other places using AI. So why don't you start out with us this time?
Yeah, I think I have to talk about first just the drama that seems to surround AI. I know there's a lot of controversy around how it should be used and what it should be used for. And I think those questions, you know, need to bear fruit and need to be discussed. There's definitely implications for using it. That being said, there's a lot of ways I think it can be helpful. And, you know, one thing that some colleagues of mine recently presented on is using it for rubric development, which I thought was really neat. So coming up with these prompts that help them generate not just the rubric criteria and the wording and the verbiage, but how they could work with ChatGPT to determine, you know, what could we make and kind of standardize across courses in terms of what the rubrics would look like, standardizing some of that language. You know, you start to kind of get in the weeds with rubric development, especially when you're trying to show these different points of assessment throughout the program. And you want to keep them consistent so that you have that data across those courses. And I think, you know, ChatGPT can be helpful in particular in looking at some ways to do that. One thing they talked about when they were discussing this in a presentation was that they were really intentional about pulling out that verbiage and then adding their own, you know what I mean, personalizing this, not just using whatever ChatGPT gave, and then making sure that they were, you know, aligning this with their own kind of vision for how this would go. So I think it could be really useful for that in terms of developing that verbiage and then consistency. Again, something we talked about in an earlier podcast was that the prompts really determine how this goes and structuring those prompts. So they talked about what a learning experience it was for them to be able to do this. I've used it personally for a lot of different role play preparations. So create a client and I give a scenario for a client and have it write a story about a client that we can use. I found it to be really fun in career. So I teach a career course that I use three different clients that were created with ChatGPT. And then at the end of the term, I have the students provide me with prompts for a client that they would want to work with and then generate another one. And I tell the students I'm getting these stories from ChatGPT, which they think is really interesting. The first one I don't modify. I didn't modify. And there's some really clunky kind of language and parts of the story that don't fit real well. And they get to point that out. So that part is kind of fun. The other ones I have kind of modified to fit what we wanted to do in that course. So I think there's a lot on the practical end, but there's a lot of ways to be creative with it too in developing instruction. So those are two of the things that came to mind for me.
You know, I think let's go back to the prompt thing, because I think I've gotten better at getting results the more time I spend doing prompts. Mm-hmm. And when the results come out, I don't look at it and go, okay, well, I got to fix this, or this isn't what I intended. I just start back and with ChatGPT and go, no, do this, but cut that out. I don't want that. And it will regenerate it getting closer and closer. So For me, the better you are at creating prompts, and there are all, you can go on the internet and find all sorts of ways of suggesting and doing prompts to improve your prompts. But really, if you engage it in a conversation of what it's producing for you and ask for some corrective measures and what it's done, it will get closer and closer and closer to what you want. And even some points where I go, this is not what I want. This is what I want. Try this again. You've got some good ideas in here, but try this again. And it will get closer to what I want. So when it comes out, I can make the tweaks I used to. I'm getting better at prompts and getting better at engaging in those conversations with ChatGPT to get what I want out of it. For listeners, look at prompt engineering. There is a process that is a prompt that actually acts as an engineer for your prompt, and that's a it's an additive and reductive kind of process that you go through before you actually put the final prompt in, and it gets you what you want right on target. The other thing that I would suggest is look at the Pareto principle about learning, because if you're putting together anything that is about a lesson or a lesson plan, apply that principle and you'll get more on target things that are going to be meaningful for your students as an outcome. So really, prompts, 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 and working on your ability to develop and practice using prompts.
Yeah, and the fun part is, I think, at least I enjoyed it, was that you can be conversational in your responses, and it can
Yep.
understand what it is you're asking for. So when you say, I like what you have, but make these changes, you might actually type that in, and it can
Yeah.
discern what is a request and what is just a statement, and it will make those changes. So there's some ways that you can make this really advanced, and you can get into this kind of prompt engineering space. But you can start with just being really conversational with it and what it puts out for you. Something else I thought was neat was is the format you can request things in. So if you want something in a table, or you want something a graphic representation, there's some things that it can do with displaying that data that I think are really helpful.
Yeah, I'm involved with a association where we're beginning to do a strategic plan. And the general body of what goes into a strategic plan for an association, I generated, and I made this clear to the association I was working with. I generated it through ChatGPT, and it covered so many areas of what an association needs to work on. It was the output was really amazing. So I took that, told the board, this is what I did, sent it to the board. The board went through and said, these are the areas we want the strategic plan committee to focus on. Out of these 12 areas with five or six sub areas in each one, these are the points we want you to focus on. So then I was given back the task and I'm like, okay, so these are the areas. How do I generate what are the parts of a strategic plan? So I asked it to create a table for me that has in the first column the particular strategic initiative, and in the second column, ways to evaluate the strategic. It created a table that had all those pieces in it. So now the table has those elements that have been sent to us by the board with the different areas like, what are the action items you're going to be doing? How are you going to evaluate this? What is the timeline necessary for it? With sort of prompts in each one of those title cells telling us how we can shape whatever we put in that area. So, and the committee I'm working with is well aware of how we're generating these things. But it now it becomes the committee gets together and looks and just kind of fills that stuff in with their best knowledge of what would move the association forward. So your table comment, that was my first use of developing a table. And I was pretty amazed and pretty surprised on how well that worked.
Yeah, it's neat, and I think it brings this up too. I think it's just an idea generator. Chat GPT can be really useful. So if you feel stuck in terms of lesson planning and ideas, something as big and kind of lofty as a strategic plan, even, it can give you these ideas that you can use to drill down into what you actually want. It's funny, I went in kind of to prepare for this and just asked ChatGPT what it's useful for educators. And it talked about it can answer questions, it can help with lesson planning, homework support, language learning, feedback generation, professional development, idea generation, accessibility support. So considering accessibility and how materials would be accessible, and then just a quick reference tool. So it gave just here's some ideas of things it can do. So you can even ask when you're like, what are you capable of? And it will tell you what it can do to be helpful.
As far as output, I've sometimes used kind of bulleted output, particularly if I have a body of information and I'm going to speak about it tonight and I need to develop some slides to go with it. I don't need detail on my slides if I'm going to speak about it. In fact, I kind of hate it when people read all the detail on their slides. But it will generate a general outline in various areas, whatever I put in. And from that, I can move that into a slide format, and I have sort of a lecture then available to go with that from my knowledge and experience in those areas. I don't have to put every detail down on the slide to be prompted by the slide to be able to talk about that particular issue. So it's kind of a quick way for me to get my thoughts organized into that type of framework. I mentioned the strategic plan. I've used it for case development. So I have a couples course that I taught last fall, and trying to develop cases for the couples course, there'll be certain areas where there are different ways in which you would respond to a scenario depending on what's going on in terms of domestic violence issues, for example. So I could create a case and could also then have the case be created around one of those particular elements, and then ask ChatGPT to replicate that case, but add this element in or take this element out. And then I would have four or five different role play cases that small teams could work on and talk about potential interventions with a couple that is facing those distinct sort of differences in the area. You can do things cultural. You I mean you can add cultural pieces in. You can make sure that ChatGPT takes that into consideration when developing it. Folks will talk about the ethics of doing this. I think, if the computer is generating this simulated case, you have a responsibility as an instructor to read it, look it over, and make sure that it's what you want and what's intended in the purpose, and edit where necessary. So I've seen people also use ChatGPT for clinical disorders. And I know ACA right now is working on some discussion about using AI in terms of diagnosis and the appropriate use of diagnosis. But the way I've heard people use it for clinical cases is the instructor, this is not me, but the instructor would generate a case around a clinical disorder, hand it out to students, have students kind of evaluate the disorder, and then evaluate the accuracy of what ChatGPT did, like what was missing, what was accurate or inaccurate in the process. So, you can use it against itself in that way as a teaching opportunity for students.
I think another thing too, just in considering how we're using it, ChatGPT will provide disclaimers a lot of the time around the content that it generates, especially if it's around something as sensitive as mental health. So if you're creating a story, that's fine. It doesn't, but one thing I put in just as a test at one point was, list the diagnostic criteria for major depressive disorder. And it would list that out based on what it has from the DSM-5, and then gives a disclaimer at the end and says it's important to note that diagnosis should be made by a qualified mental health professional based on a comprehensive assessment of the individual's symptoms and history. So it will provide this kind of disclaimer most of the time. So, those things are important too, to reiterate, I think, to students that this is not designed or intended to be used in this way to diagnose, but it can be a supportive reference or tool.
One last practical thing. I'm sure this might upset some folks, particularly ones that I've written letters for. Letters of recommendation. I mean, if you've had to write student or colleague letters of recommendation, after a while, they all kind of be they're all kind of the same. And so taking a template that you use for a general letter of recommendation, running it through ChatGPT, particularly to change pronouns and to, move names around and things like that, but leaving space in there where you can actually put in some, and you can put this in as part of your prompt, some of the unique aspects of what that student did that you were recommending them for. So you can just put that in as line, bullet lines in your prompt, and it will generate the body of that letter of recommendation with the unique aspect of why you're recommending the student. So saves a lot of composition time in that. Of course, you have to go back and you have to review it and make sure that it's an accurate depiction of what you want to say in that. So that's a few of the ways I think most of the ways that I use the tool. I think I need to think more about, hey, I could try this. I could use this for this particular activity, and see what happens, and see if I can incorporate AI more, with my workflow.
Yeah, I mean, productivity-wise, I was thinking the same thing. So some of the things we've talked about, the reference letter thing is great. There's just those common tasks that I think it can really be helpful with, and I'd like to do more of kind of exploring that. I know there's some guidance too around having it help with cover letters and thank you emails and all those kinds of things. And you can find those things by Googling, but ChatGPT lets you personalize and add things that you want as a part of that and helps you put that language together, which I
Yeah,
think is
sometimes
neat.
I use it for constructing letters. If I know I have to send a letter out to the committee or a committee, I'll bullet in everything that I want in the letter, have it generate the letter or email for me. I'll say, no, this is not professional enough. This is too familiar for the voice that I'm using. Just add this, tweak this a little bit and make it sound more like a professional business letter or email. And it'll make that adjustment. And I'll go in and take out things that I think are too lofty, that people would say, Jensius would never say that anyways. So I'll course correct it in the process. But yeah, it speeds up that cold writing that you have to do for the business that we do. Interesting thing that I heard, I think I'm wondering if this is going to go this way. It looks like I'll be presenting at a conference this summer on AI and productivity with a bunch of technologists, which is going to be very loads of fun for me to present on that. But Apple is starting to develop their own AI base, and at the same time, one of the concerns about AI is all of these chat bots chat with each other. So you think you're asking ChatGPT a question, and ChatGPT will generate its own, but will also talk to Gemini. And so the aggregation of garbage could be worse. If you look at what's going on with lawsuits, New York Times is really angry at AI-generated material because they're going to their open source of New York Times information, and whatever you think of the New York Times, They're using their material without permission of New York Times to, for that access. And that's all generated material that is copyright of New York Times. So I think what we're going to see in the future is we're going to see AI that services, and I think this is where Apple is going with it. And they're developing something, Ajax, I think, is the platform they're working on. But it's going to be curated in the sense that the results are going to come from reliable sources and they're going to have relationships with those reliable sources. So the material that you get back from AI is a little bit more verifiable, citable, et cetera. And so it's not such a wild, wild west with AI. And I think that's where platforms are going to have to move and will move. But I think it comes with curation and that comes with cost. And that's probably going to be real essential for places like ChatGPT, OpenAI, who are providing this this platform and this API for people to be able to use. So
It's interesting. And it raises an interesting question. You know, if you're putting that material kind of in a public space for free and it accesses it and uses it, how does that separate from me using it, you know, myself as an individual? Well, attribution, I think, is the other part of this, right? You know, if it's not getting credited for that information that it's providing, then is it kind of, you know, stealing this information in some way. As you mentioned too, you know, there needs to be some accountability for the information that's provided. We want it to be, you know, relatively accurate or come from accurate sources. And I think there's going to be a bigger debate too around what that is and who agrees on what is a reputable source and what's not. You know, so I think it's going to be an ongoing debate. And you might see the separation of AIs based on where they pull their information from and who their sources are and how that fits, you know, what the consumer thinks is a reputable source.
I think it's going to become the issue of reputable sources and citable sources within AI retrieval is going to be sort of a large marketplace issue in the future. That it's going to be turned into more of a reference focused product. There are a few. There's one other app that I've been playing with that is, well, there's a couple of apps, Read.io, and but in particular, Elicit is an app that will you can put PDFs of articles in, and it gives you summaries. The app itself structure seems to fit around research model. Articles because it generates, what was the population it did, what was the test that it used, what was the so it's set up and the architecture is really set up for, quantitative based research, and that. But that's a another app that's out there in order to gather material and gather material across various articles and doing meta-analysis on those articles. And those are the kinds of services that I think academics are looking for out of AI, let alone having to organize that all on themselves in various ways. So,
Yeah,
and
it's
I saw
interesting
it.
to check out Elicit for sure.
I saw because I'm getting promotional material from them now, that they are looking at connecting to your reference database. So, like, there was an article today on how to import Zotero references into Elicit to be able to do whatever you're going to do with it. And it's a paid service. It's nothing to laugh about. It'll cost you money. But I'm fascinated with the idea of productivity around the work that we do. So, boy, this is going to take some editing because I just lost my notes. I just lost my notes. Fire alarm in my notes. Okay. Okay. So, do you have anything else to add, Eric?
I don't think so. I think it's just exciting, and I like the idea of returning to this maybe, 3, 6, 9 months from now, just to see what's changed and what kind of developments have come out. Because I think you're going to continue to see things change rather quickly.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm excited. I think sometime around summer we're going to start seeing some, at least from Apple's standpoint. Tim Cook has been hinting at we're going to put our foot into AI, and I think that's coming out with the new operating system that'll come out in the summer. And so I think this is all teasing us for some rollout of, at least from Apple's standpoint, AI systems versus the stuff Microsoft is, I guess, is heavily invested in ChatGPT. That's gotten Elon Musk upset, that they were a nonprofit. They have a nonprofit organization. They have a for-profit organization, and the for-profit organization is going gangbusters with people investing, particularly Microsoft, heavily in the API and in what ChatGPT can do. So all of their Copilot, Microsoft is using Copilot through a lot of its product, and as a result, they're paying buku bucks to the for-profit version of OpenAI. So I'm anxious to see what happens in the summer, maybe in 6 months, see what's out there and how the landscape has changed. I think next time we put together a calendar of things that we could talk about, and one of the things was calendars. Let's talk about calendars next time and how one manages calendars.
Yeah, I actually need a little bit of help with that. So I'm gonna grab a couple and see if I can start playing around. Just in I need integration, so I gotta get the
Yeah.
company.
And I
It's really
can't, you know,
complicated.
and I struggle with it because our university runs through Microsoft and it doesn't play well with anything but Microsoft. Any other calendar platforms that you're using, it's just a headache. So, yeah, integration is the big part. So, we put it in one place and it shows up everywhere else that you're going to need it. And be there reliably and easily to change if you want to. So yeah, we'll talk about calendars next time. How can listeners get involved? Well, if you've got a tech question, if you're trying to figure out how to do something with technology, you have an idea to share, email us at thepodtalknetwork@gmail.com or call and leave us a message at 330-333-1240, and we'll play your question on the podcast and try and get an answer to you. Our bumper music is from Philip Gross, Rast, from the Free Music Archive. That's it for today's show. Thanks for subscribing to the Tech Savvy Professor podcast.